case of the day, Maria de Seminario in Fairfax County Public Schools.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. My name is Ben Tricolo. I'm here on behalf of Maria Seminario. And what we are respectfully asking this court to do is to reverse the decision of the Virginia Workers' Compensation Commission and apply the plain language of the average weekly wage statute.
Mr. Tricolo, did you want to reserve any time for rebuttal, sir?
Yes, sir. I'm sorry. 3 minutes, please.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
We're asking the court to apply the plain language of the average weekly wage statute and calculate Ms. Seminario's earnings as a teaching assistant based upon what she earned during the 43 weeks that she was employed.
Ms. Trickle, I found this case very interesting. Back when I was younger, I used to be really good in math, and I was reading this and kind of playing around with the numbers, and as I was playing around with the numbers, after about an hour of looking at it, I said to myself, wait a minute, if we do it the way that Mr. Tricolo is suggesting, this person would actually get a windfall because she usually did not work during the summer. Her constant way of working was that she would, like many teachers, work during the school year, and then she would take the summer off. And so if we use the calculation suggested by you, and I will suggest that there's a lot of ingenuity in it, that it would result in a windfall for her because she would actually be receiving more than she would be entitled to under the framework that the workers' compensation law
provides.
Well,
when you say that, first off, it'd be 80% of her average weekly wage.
Yes, sir.
And in determining fairness, bear in mind that 65-2-500 sets a legislative cap that no injured worker can receive more than their average weekly wage. So the concept of an injured worker getting their average weekly wage, certainly it would be fair to say the General Assembly did not consider that malum in se or malum prohibitum because they specifically contemplate that. So putting this in perspective, is it shocking to the conscience that Ms. Seminario, who earned $31,000 in 43 weeks, which I respectfully submit is her ability to earn, what she does in that other 9 weeks, she's under no contractual obligation to the school board. She's a free agent, can do whatever her wants. That time has value. And whether she looks for work or doesn't look for work is irrelevant. So
why would you say it's irrelevant? And what I would compare, and that both sides have talked about this, is those cases dealing with seasonal workers. And then essentially, I think it would be fair, and everyone would say that a seasonal worker is working during the season. In other words, there's an inability in this area because of snow and cold and all that to cut grass and trim bushes and things like that during the winter months. And so therefore, it is fair to that particular type of worker to use the formula that you would suggest, as opposed to a teacher's aide who makes an election, for better or worse, that she does not want to work for the school system during that 3 months hiatus.
Well, the first point is the work or not work is nowhere in the statute. The commission in this case picked a special rule only for school employees. Why it's not stated? If you look at the commission cases, they're all over the place. We have EFSCE versus Prince William School Board, where they utilize the calculation method we're requesting the court to follow. In Goodyear versus Mendenhall, this court affirmed a commission decision where a worker was on strike for 12 weeks and said that period should be excluded. Why is this unpaid leave, where the claimant is free to do whatever she wants, any different than a worker who's on strike, who could go out and get a job during that strike period, could do the same thing? But let me review some scenarios with the court as to why this ruling is not only contrary to the plain language of the statute, but makes no sense. If Ms. Seminario looked for work, then the 9 weeks becomes time lost. Because what we're talking about here is we seem to agree the second method of calculation under 101 is to be followed. You take 52 weeks, eliminate time lost. The commission said the 9 weeks are not time lost. But if she looked for work, it would become time lost. Now, what if she testified that I've looked for work in the past, but I found out they don't have any teaching assistant jobs and I just didn't pursue it? Would that have been good enough?
Then what would possibly happen, and again, I can't speak for the commission, is that the commission would make a factual determination that her statement is supported by the evidence and thereby calculated, theoretically, based upon the calculation or formula that she would suggest, or they could say that we find her to be incredible and calculate it the other way.
How about if you said, I looked for three jobs and couldn't find any? How about if she says, I found unrelated employment as a server? Now, that's not going to go in her average weekly wage, but yet we would add the nine, we would divide by 43 instead of 52. That would become time lost if she found unrelated employment. Now, if she finds similar employment under the commission rationale, there's a real bonanza because you would add these similar earnings into her average weekly wage, plus you would divide by 43.
But dividing by 52 weeks in the year, doesn't that give us a common benchmark to work from? If the purpose of the calculation is to fairly determine the economic loss, doesn't it make sense to, as a default position, you look to the 52 weeks in the course of a year?
Well, except if you look at the wage chart on page 32 of the record in any other workers' comp case, they're going to divide by 43. This lady earned $31,000 over a 52-week period, but this wasn't leave that she was charged. She had that free time. So what is she really earning? Isn't it the fact that she has the ability to earn this money in 43 weeks and not in 52?
Well, is it a difference between a theoretical economic loss and an actual economic loss? If in actuality, her annual income is earned in just the 43 weeks, it still is her annual income.
The commission rationale makes it theoretical because if she does something that is totally unrelated to her economic loss, it then becomes counted. Namely, if she merely looks for work, and there's no parameters, there's no guidelines in the statute as to how hard does she have to look, and does it have to be related income or unrelated income. And again, the commission cases are all over the place, from the case where the striking workers' earnings are excluded. Why wasn't a 52-week benchmark utilized in Mendenhall or the Goodyear v. Mendenhall case or Efsky versus Prince William School Board? It's both Efsky cited in the full commission decision. In that case, they didn't use the 52-week.
But didn't IFSK, it wasn't their conclusion that the employer there had failed to carry its burden? That seems to be the only thing that I can make sense out of IFSK is that the employer failed to carry its burden there, as opposed to, in this case, apparently, according to the commission, they did.
The commission just said they thought it was fair in that case without explaining why. And that's why this is an important issue for this court to decide. Burchett, another case where the average weekly earnings were divided by 219. It was a non-teacher. Why teachers have to be penalized and school employees. The commission relies on Scott versus Virginia Beach.
I'm going to ask your opponent colleague this question when he gets up, but I would suggest that the easy case, at least from my perspective, without having heard him talk about it, is that if we had the employee who works for the Fairfax County Public School System who works a 12-month year, works the calendar year, and they sustain the same injury that your client sustained, to me it's an easy case. They get the benefit of the calculation that you're suggesting because that's the easy case. They're actually working during that time. But here, because of the unique facts and circumstances of this case where your client has made an election that she doesn't want to work during, or chosen that she doesn't want to work during the summer for whatever reason, and that in the 15 years that she's been there, she only did it 1 year, 1.5 years, would suggest that this formula that you suggest doesn't really provide the appropriate basis for calculating her wages.
Well, the formula is right out of the statute, Your Honor. The 101 says, but if the injured employee lost more than 7 consecutive calendar days during such period, although not in the same week, then the earnings for the remainder of the 52 weeks shall be divided by the number of weeks remaining after the time lost. The issue here is whether the commission can get in the business of legislation. The General Assembly has defined what's shocking to the conscience, and an employee who is paid up to their average weekly earnings is not shocking to the conscience because the General Assembly said, we're going to permit that. Your compensation cannot exceed your average weekly wage under Section 500. They've also said we're going to take your earnings if you miss time from work and exclude that from the calculation. The commission has added legislative language in here saying we're only going to apply that if you look for work. And that's nowhere in the statute, and it's nowhere in the case law except for the isolated cases where they choose to apply it. And the victims, unfortunately, are school employees. So I respectfully submit there's no unfair result, and the true measure of this lady's earning capacity is what she earned in 43 weeks, and what she does in her own time is irrelevant. If she were a construction worker or the worker in the Burchett versus Fresh Start case or Carter versus Georgia Pacific, she would get the higher average weekly wage. Because the school board elected to lock her into a 12-month contract where she had no obligation during those 9 weeks, she's penalized.
Well, you've just stated that her earning capacity is such that we should just use the 43 weeks. Isn't the issue here not what her earning capacity is, but what the economic loss is? And isn't there a difference between those two concepts?
I submit the issue is, do you apply the statute where it says the earnings of the employee are to be calculated by dividing by 52, and if they miss more than 7 days, you divide by the number of weeks worked. And are there exceptional reasons where this is unfair? I don't believe we have a finding in the record that's supported by that. Because if we're gonna talk about unfairness, don't we have to quantify it? And 80% of her pre-injury earnings is certainly not a windfall, Your Honor, I don't think. Under this calculation, her comp rate would be 80% of what she actually earned. But that's assuming those 9 weeks are valueless. And all she had to do, I think Will Rogers said he didn't like the income taxes because it made liars out of honest people. And all the claimant has to do is say, oh, I looked left and right and just couldn't find anything. Why have a rule that is meaningless? And if she looks and doesn't find work, it gets counted. If she looks and finds unrelated income, it gets counted. If she looks and finds related income, then there's a windfall. I'm asking this court to apply the plain language of the statute and the rule that's been followed by the commission in cases where non-school teachers and non-school employees are involved.
All right, sir. Thank you. We'll reserve the rest of your time for rebuttal. Yes, sir.
All right. Good afternoon, Your Honors. Michael Salveson for Fairfax County School Board. The purpose of the average weekly wage calculation is to approximate the economic loss. As this court said in Mendenhall, I think it was, the earning capacity due to approximate the economic loss of earning capacity due to a work-related injury.
Mr. Tricolo is suggesting that taking that approach in a vacuum would ignore the precise wording of the statute. Under 65.2-101, what would be your response to that?
I would say that you need to give the word loss its plain meaning in the statute. When we lose something, when we lose our car keys, when we lose one of a pair of socks, it's something that happens unintentionally. It's something, when you throw one away, or you give something away, or you forego or forsake something, that's not losing that thing. Loss connotes a certain involuntary loss of time in the statute due to things like personal injury, family illness, FMLA leave when it's unpaid, plant closure, strike, as this court found in the Mendenhall case. I would submit that the word this court used in the Mendenhall case is maybe a little instructive in our understanding of the word loss.
But in this case, in this case, it seems to me from looking at the record that Ms. Seminario apparently had the option from time to time as to whether or not she wanted to work through the summer or not. Apparently she did it 1 year, 1.5 years or something. But she did appear to have an option as to whether or not she was going to work during the summer. And it's been conceded that she sustained a workplace injury and that because of that she was not able to meet her wage. And so therefore she was entitled to compensation.
Correct.
Assuming all of that to be true, isn't her injury curtailing her ability to pursue that opportunity to work during those 9 weeks of the summer that she would have otherwise been entitled to pursue?
Oh, yes, indeed. But the average weekly wage calculation is retrospective. It has to do with what happened in the 52 weeks immediately preceding the accident.
So it's not a prospective baseline, it's a retroactive
correct.
Baseline.
If let's say that she was awarded compensation and she was totally disabled through the summertime period when normally she would not be working, she would still be eligible to collect compensation. The calculation of her compensation would take into account what happened during the 52 weeks preceding the accident, but her eligibility on a week-to-week basis would not be affected by whether she works in the summertime or not.
What if she worked 14 summers out of the 15 summers that she was there, and the one summer that she did not work because her husband took her on their 50th year anniversary dinner cruise or whatever, she didn't work that summer, but she had worked the prior 14, would it be fair to say that she's not entitled to the calculation under the 43 weeks rather than the 52?
Well, that would be a factual issue. I don't know how that would come out. It would really depend on some nuances and details of how that all plays out. This is not a difficult factual issue. The deputy and the full commission could see that this was a lady who chose not to work in the summertime. She didn't work and she didn't look for work. And we're not, I wish I had that option. I would like not to work in the summertime or to look for work in the summertime. But this is a fact of life of the school year employee. Teachers, instructional assistants, there may be one or two other categories of school board employees who work just during the school year. And when the school year is over, like the students, they say goodbye. It's not unlike the seasonal employee, and in the seasonal employee cases like Yeager, the seasonal employee is entitled to a calculation based only on the number of weeks the seasonal employee worked if the seasonal employee remains in the labor market. I think that's what it says. If the seasonal employee seeks or accepts employment during the
and that's the why time you see a lot of people who are in the landscaping industry driving snow plows during the winter because
right,
they want to keep
right.
themselves in the market.
And now there was one mention of dissimilar employment. I don't think the person would get a double benefit if they had dissimilar employment in the summer. I think it would entitle the person to the calculation of the 43 weeks. If they had similar employment during the summer, let's say the instructional assistant found work in a daycare center as an instructional
if she worked at
assistant.
Vacation Bible school during
then
the
then you take all 52 weeks, including the wages earned over the summer. In fact, I had that case before a deputy commissioner.
Did you fight it?
Not something, no.
Okay.
No, we paid it based on the 52 weeks.
Okay.
But the economic loss is the key here. There is no loss when one gives something away. I'm happy to answer questions. I think this is an easy one.
We shall see how easy it is after Mr. Tricolo takes his rebuttal. Mr. Tricolo, tell us why this isn't so easy as it would be suggested by your opponent colleague.
It was easy because the school board initially calculated it my way, and now they're asking Ms. Seminario to pay them back. So they thought it was so easy, they did it the way we're advocating. But I would ask the court to look at the Mendenhall decision where economic loss was measured and say, what is different about this case? There, the court said economic loss was measured by excluding 12 weeks that a worker was on strike. Now, you could say that's intentional or unintentional, but clearly the worker could work. The only prohibition the union's going to have is if he's working for the employer that is the subject of the strike. But in that case, this court found that excluding that accurately measured economic loss. And two of the other cases we cited, the Burchett case and Carter, the commission, without any hesitation, utilized the same formula, the weeks worked. So, I think the examples Judge Alston raised, the example is very good, that you're going to get, under the commission's rule, you're going to have inconsistent applications depending on the notion of fairness that the decision makers are confronted with. So your example was a good one, the teacher that goes on a 20-year anniversary and it just happens to be the year of her injury, his or her injury, and then they say, oh, you didn't look for work. Or how about a first-year teacher? If this was Ms. Seminario's first year, you have no track record, you better divide by 52. She has the ability to earn $31,000 in 43 weeks. That's her earning capacity. And what she does after that is totally irrelevant. We have a statutory formula.
But is it earning capacity that we're after here?
We're after average weekly wage, Your Honor. Okay. Oh, I apologize. Yeah. We're after the definition in
65.2-101,
which defines the term, and the court has interpreted that to exclude a very similar period to this. So what I should have more accurately stated is her average weekly wage is accurately measured by that 43-week period because that's what she earned. And I'm asking this court to follow the statutory formula and avoid this trap that the commission has created for itself of applying inconsistent notions of fairness.
Thank you, sir. We'll come down to Greek Council.